This is the place where sports opinions collide, dead and sports.
As hell, loud as hell.
Yeah, it's going to be a twofer this week, man. Monday has been one. Today, Monday, what is it, October 29th? It's been one hell of a day for in the NFL. One hell of a weekend for Cleveland. A lot of changes in basketball and, of course, football. So it was so much happening that FIFO hit us up and he was like, "Yo, like we need to double up." So that's why we're here. So we're not burying the lead today. Nah. We all know what everybody's talking about, man. Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley were let go.
That was very interesting because in our text thread, right, like we saw Hugh Jackson get fired first, and then we were all saying that Todd Haley was kind of clamoring for that job. And, you know, when you watched them on Hard Knocks, you know, it just you felt kind of that tension between Hugh Jackson and the rest of his coordinators, because obviously he had tenured coordinators in Todd Haley, who was the defensive coordinator. You know, I'm bad with names.
Greg Williams.
These guys have been around for forever, you know, and they're highly respected in the NFL. And both of these guys should be in a head coaching positions, right? So you kind of felt that push and pull of power. And I found it highly interesting that they also let go of Todd Haley, because it's kind of like, you didn't? Why is
that? Nah, he never liked Todd Haley.
You know what? Todd Haley is a problem. We saw it last year in Pittsburgh. And they blamed a lot of it on Big Ben. Well, first Tomlin, of course. Then it trickled down to Big Ben. And then it became Todd Haley. So when Hugh Jackson or the Browns hired Todd Haley, I was like, well, that's going to be a problem because he wants to be a head coach. And I didn't see Hard Knocks. That's all I keep hearing about is how they bumped heads.
And that's the thing. Like, oh, yeah. I watched most of the Hard Knocks series with the Cleveland Browns this year. And for some reason, I overlooked it because I'm just thinking, like, you know, they're just, you know, making it dramatic because it's an HBO show. But, like, Hugh Jackson was saying, like, this is my team, like, early on, like, early long. Mm-hmm. Like, he was saying, this is I coach the way I want to coach. This
to
is
Todd
my
Haley?
He was saying it to everybody.
To
it was
everybody.
The whole room.
Yep.
All the coordinators from the offensive line coach to
DB coach.
It was like, this is my team. You get to decide what you want to do when it's your team.
Our team has to get mentally tougher and be able to fight through the shit that we got to fight through. We got to change this drastically. And if we got guys that haven't done shit sitting around doing nothing, you know, I just don't know how we're going to do it.
Well, I respect you saying that. I mean, I used to sit in the same chair.
Joe,
let me finish. Whoa, let me finish. I used to sit in the same chair as you guys sat in. And I used to feel the same way. I just want to kill them. Okay. Until all of a sudden I sat in this chair and then they're not there. And you don't get them to practice. And you can't get them through and then you don't have them for 3 weeks. And I'm not living in my fears. That's real. And I think we all can appreciate that. Anything else? Speak now, if ever hold your peace. Get it out. Anything else?
Yeah. And he was also empowering them. Hey, you know, you do what you want with the offense. You do this, you do that, but I'm the head coach.
At the end of the day, it runs through me.
Yeah. And that's what we were saying earlier, right? Like when Hugh Jackson, about a week or so ago, when he went on that rant after the post game, it's like, bro, we know that. Like, why do you continue to do it? So obviously his power was being challenged. And obviously from the coordinators.
Or he was insecure.
Nah, it was, to me.
I think it was both.
You brought it up earlier at this point as far as you have too – it's just too many chefs in the kitchen. Everybody feels like they're a head coach and so, or like they're a lot more experienced in their position, like in their specific – like if a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, they do what they do so well that we don't need input. And then you clashing with the head coach, like, it was so obvious. I don't know why I overlooked it.
You know, it's interesting because I think last episode – you know, I brought it up, you know, towards the end. I don't know if everybody made it that far, but I was like, yeah, I don't think Hugh was going to make it. And, you know, when you look at the schedule, you were like, man, he can't afford to lose any of these games. He needed to win yesterday. But they also were not playing well, even though the schedule was tough. And then they got Kansas City next, and then they got a bye week. So the article started coming out. So that was it. Like, once they started talking to the media, it was a wrap. So I'm
This is one of your black brothers. Go ahead.
I know. Give him
the eulogy.
I know.
Another one bites the dust.
I can't defend 3-36-1. I can't defend the record. I can't defend the Hugh Jackson's tenure as a coach. What I will say is that when I look at this situation, the Browns need stability, obviously. I would have liked to have seen him play out the rest of this year. I've clamored for Hugh mainly because I've always said he didn't have talent. Let's see what he do when he gets talent. We've seen with Baker, he managed to go 2-5-1, and the kicker cost him, what, 2 or 3 games?
At least two. At least two.
But that record still falls on him. Where Hugh was in trouble is they fired Sasha and elected to keep Hugh Jackson coming into the offseason. The owner of the Browns liked Hugh Jackson and wanted to keep him. John Dorsey, the GM, wanted Hugh out of there. So this started like in the offseason, in the very beginning, once they hired John Dorsey. So, again, we have to look at the management of this organization, and they were fractured from the very beginning. So, Hugh had to make what is that manager's name? Hanley or something like that. Looks good. I'll look it up in a second. So, I look there, and then I look at them firing him, and it's like, you know, obviously this is about Baker Mayfield. And they also said that Baker isn't going to miss Hugh Jackson. That's not good either. So I don't know if they talked to him or whatever. Yeah. They said that he's not going to miss him. But I just would have preferred to see him just play it out. We know what – how many wins did you think they were going to win this year? Games.
I mean. Under 500. Obviously an improvement. Between 4 and 8 games.
I was going to say between 4 and 6. And saying 6 sounds high. But I was like guaranteed at least 3 to 4 games.
So they're kind of halfway there. You know, the one thing you want to see is improvement. And honestly, we haven't seen it. Like,
whoa.
We haven't seen it since Baker took over.
Whoa.
What
do you consider improvement?
Okay, context, right? I guess that needs to be my whole segment.
That's what I mean.
FIFO's context, right? But when you look at the team,
mm-hmm.
talent-wise, they improved all across the board.
They're right, the roster is better.
The roster is better. They've also played a lot harder. They've pretty much been in almost every, except for like the last 2 games, mm-hmm. they've been in every single game, but like down to the wire.
Real quick, in the last game, they were in that game early, and poor coaching, poor game management, poor execution cost them
of course,
a chance to go up that game.
But that's still an improvement over what we've seen in years past, correct? Mm-hmm. So just overall, as a whole squad, to me, they've been better. Now, they're not necessarily where we want them to be, but they're the team that we expected them to be, right? Like, this looks like a sub-500 team.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks better than years past. So my thing is that I'm judging them based off of where they were. Mm-hmm. And based off of where they were, you can only go up. And they look like they're way better than what they once were. Now, I think that sometimes, and you know, I guess I have a soft spot for coaches because I've been a coach. And I always feel that you need kind of a year and a half to 2 years to really, you know, get the team to buy into what you want their identity to be. And I feel that, you know, without a real franchise quarterback moving forward last year, mm-hmm. they have that now. You know, so this is kind of, to me, in my estimation, was really Hugh Jackson's first year because he has his guy now, right? In terms of Baker Mayfield. And we seen it. As soon as he stepped in, they looked better. And obviously, over the past couple of weeks, the execution, maybe they already got film on him. Maybe he's not as good as we thought he was right now, but he's still improving. He's still a rookie quarterback. It wasn't surprising that they got rid of Hugh. But like you, I would have liked to seen him, you know, coach the entire year. Because at the end of the day, I think that the job he's done is better than years past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would have been more fair to truly evaluate him at the end of the season. Let's see the true progress that we've made. Because getting rid of him now just goes to show how chaotic and disorganized this franchise is. Mm-hmm. If we could keep Marvin Lewis for almost two decades up there in Cincinnati, right? He's had a lot of up and down years, mm-hmm. right? But the identity has been there. How, you know, they're going to play hard every week. They have a quarterback. Maybe it's not the prototypical franchise quarterback, but this guy, he gets you to the playoffs. I just think that it was somewhat unfair, but from a Cleveland organization, is to be expected.
Okay, here's the thing. Most of what you said I agree with, but I think I have more of a pessimistic viewpoint of his situation that he stepped into this season. Since the regime that hired him was fired, except for him, that means he has a short leash. That means that just like how when a new offensive coordinator gets into a new system and they have a old quarterback already there, most likely they want to draft their own guy. They don't really want to be with – you don't want something used. You want to get your own new thing. So he was on a short leash. On top of that, the fact that he still had a job, I think they felt like they needed to see a lot more than even them just improving on last year, because he only won one game in 2 years. Like, what NFL coach has a job after that? Hold on. Mm-hmm. So he came into that with very low expectations from us, the objective people. But from inside, they were looking at, you got to get us at least five, especially with this roster, how we turned over most of the roster. We got good draft picks. We got a quarterback now that seems like he's the best prospect that we had in, like, the last few times we tried to draft a quarterback. It was a lot of hype. And then the way he started out by benching him and not starting him, especially the number one overall pick, I think that inside the organization, they didn't say it, but they were probably divided on that. They were like, we don't like where this is starting already, but we're gonna let this play out. When Tyrod got concussed and Baker came in and won the game, when Tyrod got concussed and Baker came in and he won that game, it showed that, okay, he should have been. Why wasn't he starting the whole time? It's like these. It's like.
But it's why now.
Yeah, it's death by paper cuts as far as his, like, what he, his decisions making, like, his whole decision making from the time he started this season to where he got fired has been horrible, in my opinion. And granted, you can make a case for why he chose to make those decisions, but the results are what the results are, you know? Like, as much as you guys say, he was competitive in these games. The fact that they lost, and sometimes they were up and sometimes they were in positions to win, it was the coaching that you all pointed out to, that probably the kicking and the coaching probably lost y'all more games than won. So when you put all that together and you have infighting in your own coaching staff, it's just – Why am I putting all this up for a guy who on average gives me one win a year?
But the thing is that when you start from scratch, right? When your roster is devoid of true talent, right? And we're talking across the board. It's not like they had, oh, you know, we got a couple of good corners or we got a good O-line, D-line. They literally did not have a starting point in terms of the roster. So that's the reason why he only won one game in 2 years. Let's be honest with that. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes, you know, as a head coach, you know, or a leader of an organization, a leader of men, a leader of people, you always feel that you could turn it around, regardless of whatever they give you, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, in professional sports, you got to have talent to compete. They just didn't have it. Over the 2 years, because they only won one game, they had a lot of high draft picks. Therefore, they were able to draft the talent, and we are seeing that.
And draft well.
And draft that was well. Exactly. Of course, you can't just have, you know, 10 first round
picks.
They've
had a lot of high picks.
Exactly.
And they've never drafted well.
And they never drafted well. So what does that say about Hugh Jackson's eye for talent? What does that say about the previous regime's GM? I don't remember Buddy's name.
Sasha. He was the one that didn't pick Wentz and didn't pick Deshaun Jackson.
Yep.
And he skipped on Watson too.
Watson. That's what I meant. Deshaun Watson. Jackson.
So. But at the end of the day, the draft picks that were made, we're seeing them. Just like the cornerback Ward. He's one of the best corners in the league, and we could definitively say that almost halfway through the season. This guy be shutting guys down. Who's their pass rusher?
Miles Garrett.
You know, like we have some real studs.
He was talking shit about the defensive coordinator. You know, after the game, said they should have did what they did in week one. You know, so what does that say about Greg Williams?
Exactly. So I give you points on maybe the best decisions haven't always been made in terms of right in the heat of the fire in terms of winning and losing games. But I think that the whole organization needs to learn how to win, and you have to go through lumps, especially when you clearly stated they won one game in 2 years, bro. Mm-hmm. This is football.
Yeah, no, it's reasonable to expect lumps, but at the same time, the writing was on the wall. Like, he just didn't seem like – he wasn't that type of coach where you go into and you like, okay, there's something brewing here. I trust him. It was always more like it felt like it was half-stepping. It felt like it was just making –
But you don't think that
– decisions on the fly.
You don't think that he deserved at least a full season to understand the full scope.
No, I agree.
And the reason why I say that is because look at their record, right? Like, they tied Pittsburgh in the first week. They've been in all of those games. Mm-hmm. If they had a real kicker, you know what I'm saying, they would have had a winning record right now. And also, we've all said on this podcast, if Baker would have started, we feel that they would have won more games, especially early on in the season, right? Would Hugh get fired if they had more wins? And then... And even with that, right, that's why I think that he deserved to complete the season. And I'm not saying that it was guaranteed that he should have stayed.
No, he probably would have been fired.
He probably would have been fired. Yeah. But I think that it just would have been – you could truly evaluate where Hugh is. And if you can bring somebody else, right, whoever is available, that's going to take him to the next step.
Right. And I don't necessarily think this fully is an indictment on his coaching, and I know that sounds crazy when he's 36, but hear me out.
It is what it is.
Yeah, man. It is what it is. So, but the reason why I say that is I'm going to go again to the organization up top. I'm going to read you this tweet. I can't even say his name, but Jimmy Haslam is the owner, and the Browns owner Jimmy Haslam said he told new GM John Dorsey that Hugh Jackson would return as head coach. There wasn't a decision. I mean, he's the owner. He gets the final say-so. But there wasn't a debate. And he said he felt like Hugh didn't lose his magic. Where Hugh messed up, and I feel like this is why I'm – and so the other part to this is that Ty Haley was fired as well. So their infighting is what led to Hugh's demise, the fact that they could not get on the same page. So what they said – and this is the last two points – is that what I heard recently – is that they felt like the team regressed and that they didn't like how the team was operating from a leadership standpoint, and that's clear, Ty Haley and Hugh Jackson.
Two things can be true at once. You can be with a bad organization and be a bad head coach. As much as I hear, as much of a bad situation that Hugh was in, it still exposed how bad of a coach he is. Like, you can't defend. I don't think anybody on this table is trying to defend 3-36 or whatever.
Nah, it is what it is.
You are what your record is. I forgot what
0.088%.
Yeah, second worst in NFL history. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like with Cleveland, there has to be a chance where you have to really evaluate yourself and say we got to stick with somebody. And
that's,
I guess, going into the next situation, you have to love the guy. The next situation, you have to love the guy.
Well, so, Haslam and
because you're gonna have to stay with him for a while. It's gonna be a marriage.
And Dorsey need to make a joint decision.
And here's the thing, right? Like, when have we seen continuity from the Cleveland Browns ever? From the head coaching, from the front office, like, we haven't seen it. And that's the
coach
reason.
Fired in the last 5 years or so.
So what does that say? That whole organization does not know how to win, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Cleveland Cavs, and I know we're gonna head that way too, but just like the Cleveland Cavs before LeBron, right? When LeBron was there as a rookie, right? They didn't make the right roster moves. He drug all of them bum ass dudes to finals, to deep playoff runs, and what did he have to do? He had to go somewhere else to learn how to win because the organization failed him. Mm-hmm. Miami, year one, they taught him how to win, and he played with a champion already, right? So he learned a lot from D. Wade. He learned a lot from Pat Riley. He learned a lot from the process. He learned a lot from losing to Dallas, mm-hmm. right? And he came back, and LeBron has been LeBron that we know and been a Mount Rushmore guy. So I say all of that to say is that the Cleveland Browns need, first and foremost, I don't care who they pick. I don't care if they pick defensive head coach, this, that. It, you have to have continuity. You have to give that head coach 5 years, regardless of how bad it looks. It, even if it's another Hugh Jackson situation.
I won't go that far. I won't say five. I would say you have to give him a solid, like the Hugh Jackson, 3 years.
But three.
It should have been 3 years.
Three,
he should have finished out with the
but
season.
But 3 is not enough, especially.
Three is enough with this roster.
I was going to go there.
Okay.
I was going to go there. 3 overall is not enough. However, they got the roster to where it is. So I would say that's fair, right? But, like, let's look at Byron Scott when he took over the Lakers. They were devoid of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? They had the worst, like, 3-year, 4-year stretch of the whole organization's history. Was it because Byron Scott can't coach?
Well, I think that's the case too, because he had young talent in Cleveland, and they and he
we ain't talking Cleveland.
But I'm saying there was a sample size worth of what he had. What can he do with young talent? And there's a sample size what he can do without. But they looked similar.
But what young? Are we talking Kyrie, Deion Waiters, and Tristan Thompson?
That's young talent.
Yeah, but Deion. First of all,
2 out of 3 of those are champions.
Yeah, but for one reason, his name is LeBron. but hold on, Tristan can play. I'm not giving no slack to Tristan. And obviously, we know how I feel about Kyrie. Deion was the guy that was questionable, and the reason why I say that is I've said bad pick. They could have took Andre Drummond, and then do you know why they say that they wanted to take Deion? I always mention this.
You said because they want to get the ball out of Kyrie's hands.
They want another ball handler, so Kyrie don't got. Are you talking about the best, arguably the best ball handler ever in the history of basketball? You don't want him to handle the ball? Get the hell up out of here. So again, what does that talk about? Mentality, vision, right? Mm-hmm. For the team, how you want to construct the team. The Browns right now, they have a roster that's ready to play against anybody in the league. Let's be honest. I'm not saying that they're better than anybody. The Rams have the best roster, 1-53. But the Cleveland Browns can hang through 4 quarters against anybody in this league. They just need a coach with a vision that isn't undermined by the rest of his staff.
Right.
And they can continuously add more talent and get everybody on the same page. If they can do that, because again, I think they have the pieces.
I do too. I like what they have. They got a running back, quarterback.
So would you take an offensive head coach or a defensive head coach?
Got to go offensive in this league,
especially with a young quarterback.
I would say this is the best opportunity to go for a young, either like college coach.
They're looking at Lincoln Riley, or obviously because of the connection.
Or like they need to go, and I saw this report. I think on the Herd. Colin Cowherd was saying that Sean McVay's gonna get a lot of coaches fired.
Because
everybody wants a Sean McVay now.
Of course,
and I can't blame them because you need some Baker. I think Baker, especially with this young roster still being like in its stages where they're still like you can see the potential in them being a lot better than what they are, and like you said, they were competitive this year nonetheless. But you need a young coach to get to connect with him.
Sean McVay is a special talent, though. He's an elite talent. From what I'm starting to hear about
him. He's talented and experienced. Like, he started looking at plays when he was 5.
Right, and apparently he has a hell of a memory. So,
yeah.
You know,
not saying you have to get a Sean McVay, but you have to get someone of that brings that type of energy and continuity and that leadership.
Yeah.
Because you can't, to me, like, If you fight with your coaching staff, like, how am I supposed to respect that?
Well, that's what got Hugh Jackson fired, in my estimation. I know people going 3-36, 3-36. Bro, you're your leadership.
Did he pick out that coaching staff, or that was that placed?
I don't
on
know,
him?
And I meant to look that up before
I
got here.
If he did that, then that means that shows another example of why he's a bad coach.
Yeah, because I really wanted to know how Ty Haley got there and who made that decision.
My main thing is Greg Williams more than Ty Haley, because to me it makes sense with Ty Haley since he just left Pittsburgh
and he knows the division.
And so far, the Browns always picking up from the division. Like, if you look at the Bengals roster, there's some on the Browns. But
that's why, you know, like, I know it's easy to look at the record. And I understand everybody want to look at the record. To me, I look at the owner and the GM was split on whether to keep him. That's strike one. And strike two, you can't fight with your coaches, bro. And you, and from hearing what you guys were saying about his insecurities as the head coach, realizing that he had Ty Haley and Greg Williams there, and he was trying to, you know, basically plant his flag, that didn't help. And then they had differences and disagreements in how they wanted to use Baker. Like, when you have that type of discord with your coaches and you guys can't agree and you're the guy, then, yes, it's going to fall on you. That's bad leadership. That's bad coaching, because you can't coach the people underneath you. If Ty Haley, if they would have retained Ty Haley, then it's a different story to me. But the fact that Ty Haley was also kicked out, that tells me
main thing is that they, and like FIFO said earlier, they should have just let him play out this season, because to me it shows way more dysfunction. Like, if you fired him at the end or you fired him beginning, you look like a good organization nonetheless. Yep. If you fire him in the middle, right before 2 weeks before your bye week anyway, like, yep, I can understand, right, even if you fired him on your bye week, but you play in Kansas City, arguably the number one team in the league, and you're putting your rookie quarterback in that situation.
But
the dysfunction baffles me.
It does. But I think that if you were going to do it, and I don't agree with doing it in the middle of the season, but if you're going to do it, I think you do it right before the bye week. So that way you give that coaching staff, the new coaching staff or whoever is getting promoted or shifted around, an extra week to prepare. Because you don't want to just get them in the thick of the fire. Like, next week, boom, we got a whole nother, you know, team to play. So even though I don't agree with the firing in the middle of the season, because like you said, it highlights the dysfunction. Like, and not just for this coach firing, but like the overall team dysfunction, the organizational dysfunction that are the Cleveland Browns.
I've never seen two coaches get fired back to back.
And then how often do you see the head coach and the OC get fired like that? Like, it's weird. Like, I just
it's childish. It's
extremely.
It just looks childish. Cause
it doesn't look like a professional ran organization. And I think, look, here's the thing. The beautiful thing about sports is winning cures all, and you can be dysfunctional today and be a great organization tomorrow. And it has to start somewhere. And for me, with Cleveland, you have your quarterback now. You have a talented roster. So now you have to bring in that continuity. The guy that you bring in next has to be the guy.
You have to love him. You got to be get down on your knees and bring the ring out. And it got to be at least 18 carats, because you got to marry. It's going to be a long marriage. But to me, the icing on the cake is like this whole situation is crazy, yet we still can't come up with a reason or excuse why. We can't not justify the fire. Like, we knew he was going to get fired anyway. It was just like,
yeah.
It's just, we just don't like the fact how he got fired.
Of course. And this is extremely hypothetical, and I know it's an if, and, you know, we get drunk off of ifs. But what if Hugh Jackson was able to, you know, reel off 4 or 5 wins in a row? Because I don't know, maybe you guys would disagree with me, but I think they're talented enough to win 3-4 games in a row.
They should have won 5. They should have won 5 games.
Right? Yeah, I think they could have. This was I have to pull up their schedule, but this was a tough part in their schedule. Like,
they came out early against, like, the Saints, I think the Steelers. Like,
what do you expect? What have I said in the past on this show? Everybody has that whiteboard where you go and you write your expectations on that board of what you expect from this season. And, you know, I don't know what their expectations were, but I'm surely thinking they were going to go 9-7 with Tyrod Taylor.
I don't think anything over 6 wins.
So they still had a chance to get to 6 wins. They needed to win 4.
To me, my main thing was more about the division. It's always about the division, especially when you're a rebuilding team. You always have to be more competitive in your division and win some divisional games. Because if you win the division, you can go to the playoffs. Just simple as that.
So NBC Sports has a headline. Did Browns execs force Hugh Jackson to hire Ty Haley? So it's a video, so I haven't had a chance to play it. Some of you guys listening may be able to correct us on that, but most of the articles I'm reading is not saying who made the decision to hire him. But if NBC Sports has a headline like that, I don't think you probably have.
You know what I'm actually thinking now? I think that agreement saying, okay, you'll stay on as head coach, but we're gonna get the OC. We're gonna get your whole staff. You can stay as head coach if you can get along with this staff and make wins with this staff. Then you can keep your job for the rest of the year.
Yeah. So and if he was forced, as they say, to, you know, hire him as the coach, then.
Which makes sense because of why he felt insecure, because it mm-hmm. wasn't his guys anyway, and he had to prove himself every time.
Yep. Like I test y'all, let's just pay attention to what's being said over the next couple of days. We're going to start to hear more and more of what went on behind the scenes with that whole situation. Let's stay in Ohio, man. We're going to jump over to basketball. This happened yesterday, FIFO. Is that right? Tyronn Lue.
Was that yesterday or today?
Was that?
No, it wasn't today.
It was yesterday. And then now there's dysfunction with Larry Drew taking over, talking about he's not the interim head coach.
I don't blame him.
No, I don't blame him either. Obviously, if you're going to take over a squad that's like this, give me the job, give me about 2 years, and give me that guaranteed. It is what it is. So I understand. And obviously, he's been a head coach previously in this league.
That's crazy that Larry Drew can demand that from an NBA team. That's how bad they are.
Let me go then.
Right, exactly. Y'all not going to sit here and just, you know, use me as a patch, you know what I'm saying, just to get you over the hump. You guys should have kept Tyronn Lue. Just give me, if you guys want me, give me the damn job.
Because he know those losses are going to be attached to my coaching record. So at least let me get paid for them L's.
Exactly.
Right. Make me the coach. Exactly. 100%. So, but go ahead.
But Larry Drew we pro brother on the show, right, Kenny? We are pro brother.
Yeah,
but let's
that means
be
you
honest.
You got to be anti,
but I'm, look,
we
the records
brother,
are what they are.
Real.
Exactly, the records are what they are. Let's be honest. Larry Drew was pretty decent in Atlanta, but Coach Bud took that team an extra step further, right? So Larry Drew's all right, but he's obviously not the answer. You know, and trying to rebuild, trying to get somebody that has a vision. I don't think he's the answer. I think Larry Drew is more of a guy that is better fit for a more stable situation.
Right. And, okay, so I'm glad you added that part, because I hark back to last year when Lou got sick, and they were rocking and rolling under Larry Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And
he a stepdaddy coach.
And I felt that he ain't
full-time dad. He a stepdaddy coach.
That they shouldn't have brought Lou back, and they should have let Larry Drew continue to run that whole thing. But Lou came back, and as soon as Lou came back, they started to struggle. So, so that speaks to the stability part you're talking about. Like, you have LeBron James, and you have a bunch of veterans. It's probably a lot easier to coach that. This ain't it, bro. Like, Colin Sexton, people are kind of wish-washy on him.
I like him. I don't care what nobody
says. I like him, too.
I do, too.
I just think it's that whenever LeBron leaves, he's a system. But Cleveland has been bad for so long that they don't have a system. Like, they didn't have an identity before LeBron. They didn't have one afterwards. And
so,
twice. We're seeing that twice now.
Yeah, and Cleveland's record shouldn't surprise anything. What should surprise people, what Tristan Thompson said, but we're going to act like he never said what he said.
Well, we all laughed at it anyway. We took it as a joke.
But every time they lose a game, man, I just see that headline. It just pops in my head. But,
some people still had them going to the playoffs, and I told y'all, they the lottery pick again.
But did you guys hear why Lou got fired?
No, I didn't hear
or
see that.
So apparently I don't know what's up. Lou, it's a lot of insubordination going on. But Kobe Altman wanted them to play the young guys.
Oh, yeah. He wanted to take Korver and J.R. Smith out of the rotation.
He told Lou to take him out of the rotation.
No, matter of fact, Kobe Altman told Korver and J.R. Smith that they're out of the rotation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he went up to the players directly.
To the players or to the agents, however. But he told the players, you're out of the rotation.
Yeah, the players knew. And then they got smashed, and then Lou put them back in the rotation. And he out of there, you know. So do you guys fault Lou for doing that?
No, because at the end of the day, you know, I think that how the rotation is ran, that should be up to the coach.
But Altman's the boss.
I understand that. But Altman picks the ingredients. He doesn't cook them.
I think I got another take on that. I got another spin. I think Lou sabotaged himself. I think he was just
how you figure that?
I think he wanted out.
I wouldn't go that far.
And even if you want out, that you don't like this shouldn't get you out. You know what I'm
saying?
But if he was
told directly, or like the players probably came up to him, if it's coming from up top and you're going against up top, you know how it is.
You can't do that. But he's also trying to win games.
Exactly. We 0-6.
And he's not trying to rebuild anything. You know, because now all of a sudden, what are people going to say? Like, we know what it is. But Lou's also like, man, I don't need LeBron to coach. Now we know the
everybody
truth,
thinks that.
But Lou's also trying to prove that he can win without him. You know,
here's the thing, right? Like, I think that as being the boss, as being the GM, you have to have a vision for the squad, right? Both you, the owner, and the head coach have to kind of be somewhat on the same page. Yep. And going into the season, Kobe Altman needed to have the vision, hey, we're going to rebuild. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? That means that veteran guys aren't going to play. More than likely in the first 30 games, these guys are going to be traded for assets, right? Mm-hmm. So if this was what was communicated at the beginning of the season, and then it comes down, hey, we're 0-6, play the youngins, and then Lou kind of goes against that, damn, Lou, like you knew from the beginning that this was going to be a rebuild job. And if you didn't want it, you could have stepped away. You could have just simply resigned.
Yeah. I kind of had that same feeling you did, Nick, you know, when I first started.
Before I saw about the
insubordination.
Because he was one of the only five coaches in the league, right, with a ring. So once them losses get added, like if he wants another head coaching job, He doesn't need all them padded losses on his record.
Nah, but people would have understood.
Yeah.
Like, you're not winning games.
You're not winning nothing with that roster. And Love LeBron is out again, as he always is.
Yeah, for about a month. So it gets even worse. So Lou probably is in the best situation to get out of there. So,
but here's the thing, too. This is why I also understand why, as an NBA head coach, you don't resign. It's a guaranteed contract. Mm-hmm. It don't matter how much money you got on there. You get fired, bro. You getting all that money for all those years.
Yeah, he chill on the couch. Yep. Aren't they still paying Mike Brown?
Nah, it's probably a wrap for that. But no, they were playing four head coaches at one point.
They was paying Mike Brown. Wasn't he working with the Lakers and still getting paid by the? Mm-hmm. I'm like, man,
now that's sweet.
I think Mike Brown is still getting paid by the Lakers when he went to Golden State. Like so
hey, Mike Brown's his agent is a legend.
Oh yeah. Him and Mike Brown both got dough.
So what do you do if you're Cleveland? They're 0-6, probably 0-7 by now if they were playing tonight. I don't know.
Frank the Tank.
Do you just tank. Obviously, yeah, you're just definitely tanking now, and I think Altman is doing that. But you got Sexton. Shetty looks like he can play. And who else they got?
Jetty's a rotational player. You talking about young guys?
Yeah, he's a rotational player.
Is Tristan still young or is he?
No, Tristan.
He's a veteran.
He's a veteran now.
Yeah, he's a vet.
Just Sexton.
That's right, because they really didn't have any. Zizek.
Who?
The center.
Oh, the center. Come on, man.
I mean,
this point, just give Sexton all the minutes in the world. See what the boy is.
But you got to bring him along slowly.
Well, I mean, just get him in. Obviously, they don't have a system, so they're not going to have a system this whole year. Just let him develop as an NBA player.
It's just more dysfunction than Cleveland. Nah,
it is. And it's so crazy that it was literally both squads like in the same weekend that all of this happened. But, okay, so let me go down the roster. They got Jordan Clarkson, Sam Decker. Decker. Channing Frye, George Hill, John Holland, Rodney Hood, Cal Korver, Kevin Love, Larry Nance, David Nwaba, Seti Osman, Billy Preston, don't know who that is. Colin Sexton, J.R. Smith, Tristan, and Zizek.
Okay, so
I like Osman, and I like Hood. I think Hood got a bad rep last year.
We'll see.
I think he wasn't used to playing with LeBron.
So I think the young guys that he wants to see are Clarkson and Nance, and of course, obviously
Sexton,
Jetty, and Sexton.
Here's the thing. When I look at this roster, what my GM hat tells me is there are quite a few people that we need to move on from. First off, and there's no particular order, but these are the people that I would move and I would try to get pieces back in return. Tristan.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tristan doesn't move the needle. Tristan moves the needle on a competing team because of the offensive rebounding, the defensive rebounding, the fact that he can guard, you know, he can at times, you know, guard on a switch, a three. He could guard fours, he could guard fives. You know what I'm saying? So I think that that is definitely valuable for a team that's trying to make a playoff push or a championship push. JR, likewise, you know, he's off and on, but a squad like Golden State, you know what I'm saying? A squad like, I don't really have another one that's coming to mind like that, but you know what I'm saying? Like Houston, you know what I'm saying? Houston could take JR and do something with him.
The names you're mentioning, I don't know what team would want either one of those guys, though.
Well, like, that's up to like Kobe Altman to find somebody.
Exactly. And there's going to be teams – like look.
As far as contending teams, that's what I mean.
But there's still going to be teams that feel that they can take JR and he can help them. There are teams out there. Not a whole bunch of them are coming to mind because it's going to be a small group of teams.
Damn sure ain't going to be the Lakers.
No, hell no. Oh, no. Somebody else, obviously Kevin Love. I still think is very valuable in this league.
I don't think I think you're using take very out. I think I he's valuable.
Okay, fine, valuable, fine, valuable.
I know he's Korver's valuable. On that list.
Yep.
I was surprised to hear you say Love though.
Yeah, you got to move on from Love.
I think Korver goes to the Lakers.
It's possible.
I actually thought about that.
Korver's on a vet minimum. Like it, you know, it's easy. It'd be easy for Cleveland to just waive him and he'll sign with anybody, you know, so that, you know, it is what it is. I do like Sam Decker. I don't think that Jordan. Let me pull up their salaries. Okay. I got to see how much money they're making. Cause that also dictates like who and where can,
I think Jordan's on a friendly salary though.
But I think overall what you're just looking at the makeup of that roster and saying, okay, these are the guys we got to jettison, you know, and however it happens, it just needs to happen. Or guys that you would move on from, like it's kind of hard to figure out who would make what move.
So Jordan Clarkson is making 12.5. So he definitely needs to be moved. And you can see here's the thing, right? When you're in a tanking situation, you're gonna take back bad contracts. Because it don't matter to you, right? Like you want to be bad. You don't want to have talent. You know, you want to be able to give the guys that you want to progress the time on the court. So to me, you trade Jordan Clarkson. It really don't matter what you get in return, as long as you get at least a first round pick in the future. Obviously, Kevin Love, he's making $21.17 million.
But he's supposed to be that piece. Like they gave him that contract because they knew LeBron was leaving.
Yeah, of course. But
that Chris Bosh contract.
But here's the thing, though. Can K Love, and he hasn't proven it, can K Love carry the squad by himself?
K Love is a bum.
He's a bum.
I don't think he's a bum. I just think that he's the third best guy on a championship squad.
His numbers are empty calories.
No.
His numbers are full empty calories.
I think him playing in Cleveland damaged him to play that Bosh role. Wasn't something he was suited for, and he's definitely shown he can't recover from it.
Well, physically he's been all over the place, and
yeah, I mean he's been hurt, but
he's always put up great numbers, even in Minnesota. But they didn't. He's never took that team to the playoffs, they've had all the draft picks in the world since.
He a champion now, though. he made the right move, man.
He did.
I put it to you like this:
now Cleveland would do it all this over twice over.
Do you think that Cade Love improves Houston? If somehow, some way they can pull that off.
No.
Nah, he's a defensive. They got
Houston
at this
got
point
a lot of problems.
At this point, Jimmy Butler is Houston's best. And even though I
don't know about that.
I think so because they need like if they got Jimmy Butler, they lost Trevor Ariza, replaced him with Jimmy, and they lost Mbah Mute and placed him with Carmelo. I think both of those players are upgrades on those positions.
You know what? You need to keep Carmelo off your list.
I'm just saying. You really do. I'm just saying if they got Jimmy, the players that they lost and the players they got back, are those not two better players than the ones they lost?
If you're talking Carmelo, I mean, if you're talking K Love is a bum.
Carmelo ain't a bum. Carmelo's a bum?
Now he is.
Nick.
All right.
He ain't the same, bro.
Carmelo's not a bum. I'm not saying he's an all-star or even a star. He's a solid player.
Just like they should have went with Eli, huh? Yeah, nah, bro.
I didn't say they should have went with Eli.
I held on to Melo for a minute. And they'll tell you, I used to try to cape for Melo. Nope. I had to let it go, bro. I had to let it go.
Melo's not a hoe. Y'all be hyping. Y'all just hate Melo.
No, I love Melo. Nah. I love Melo.
I don't feel the love.
Look, I know you don't feel it because you know what? Melo's in the league 2 years, 3 years too long.
Okay.
He
should have retired. Man. He should have retired.
It's tough. Melo was
You know when Melo messed up? Well, he took all that money in New York and didn't go to Chicago. Chicago was a better fit for him, even though obviously hindsight.
Chicago would have been a horrible decision. That team broke down literally the year after.
Of course, the injuries. But if we look at it, and everybody, obviously we always think that everybody's going to be healthy, right? We can't predict the injuries. Injuries happen, but we can't predict them, and we can't predict the severity of them. However, the fit, he didn't fit in New York.
No, but he's the guy that you like. He's a loyal guy. He wanted to stay with the Knicks. That's an organization.
That was a money grab.
Exactly.
It wasn't a money grab.
Yes, it is.
It wasn't just a money grab. It was the team that he wanted to go to. That's the only team he's wanted to go to outside of Houston. That's the only team I've ever heard him say.
No, of course, because he's from there. I get it. However, if it's about basketball, then it's not about money, and you leave money on the table, which is why I said Paul George was primarily about money. It wasn't about winning.
That was
a
money grab, too. You know,
you didn't read that article that came out about Paul George and the events of how him staying in OKC over going to L.A.?
Yeah, I read that. But at the end of the day, when you are a free agent, that means you are free to select your team that you're going to play for.
Correct.
However, the way that the NBA is structured, you are going to take less money by not staying with the team that has your bird rights, correct? So if I have Team A and Team B, Team A can pay me $20 more million than Team B, what are you going to do? We've seen it in the NBA. 9 times out of 10, the basketball player is going to take the more money, which is why the contracts are structured in the way that they are.
Yeah.
So that way that the hometown team, because you know how we were talking about small market teams, right? Right. Oh, and you were saying that OKC should possibly give up 4 first rounds for Jimmy as well.
Or offer something.
Yeah. And a small market team cannot do that. You know why? Just like you said, they cannot attract free agents. First of all, you have to be able to draft guys, progress those guys, and then you'll be able to attract free agents. But if you give up 4 first round picks over 8 years, what, like, OKC is going to be, look at the Brooklyn Nets. In the Brooklyn, that's a major market, and they still struggling. They look okay now.
They're starting to recover.
Yeah, because the GM was able to pull off some moves just because of some unfortunate situations across the league, and they were able to capitalize on that. But, yo, like they're not in contention. They're not even really, can we consider them a playoff team? But now they're starting to get talent. And how many years did it take them to do that?
But my reasoning for giving up those picks, just like why Houston's reason to give up those picks is, we're a good team. We've been a good team for a while. So those draft picks, we're not picking in the top 5, top 10 anymore. But it's bottom. To be honest, if you're picking outside of the top 12, top 12, top 10, you're grasping at hope.
Well, that's
as far
why Minnesota
as that player
turned the deal down, because they feel that they're going to be picking close to the second.
Exactly.
Round anyway.
So it's like, so then those picks that you're not getting any more KDs, Russell Westbrook. You're not getting any more James Harden. You're getting Draymond. Yeah,
you're hoping you get Jimmy Butler.
Or Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? But I'm just saying, like, right now, this is OKC's win. Russ ain't getting no younger. His knees is getting, like, he's getting Kyrie treatment.
But in a small market,
do what you can.
But in a small market, you cannot leverage your future. Because if you do that, you will not recover. Because you have to be able to draft your guy, and then you can pay him $30 to $40 million more than any other
team.
But
I'm saying, so right now, Russ, last year, did he sign that $200 million contract?
Oh, Russ, yeah.
Yeah.
So Russ is going to be there for a while. Paul George signed with four years.
Both of those guys are in their 30s.
I'm just saying, but at least you get to see them in all the way down to their swan song.
No, and I understand that. But think about it.
And
right?
Then 2 years later, you're gonna restart.
But think about it like in a 5 year period, right? After 5 years or within that time frame, in the next 5 years, they're going to move on from both of those guys. It's just the truth. It's how it goes down, right? Russell has already had 3 knee injuries, right?
His back hurt.
His back is hurting. He's getting older, and he's a player that relies solely on athletic ability.
He got 2-3 years
max, right, to play at this level. And then he's going to decline.
And he should stop because more he keep going, the worse it's going
to
get.
Yeah, but he don't know how to play no other way.
He knows one way to play.
Exactly, 1,000%.
Real quick, as an aside, I forgot what podcast I was listening to or what I was listening to. But Russ wasn't this guy that he is now. They said everything you see with Russ, he developed. They said he wasn't even that athletic.
Yeah, no, he was.
They said he built all that.
He was
up.
Dumb skin. I remember when he came in.
They said this is all self-taught. Like, he made himself into this star, and that's why at some point it's just going to go off because it's not a natural thing for him to do.
Mm-hmm. So when you and that's why sometimes Nick, me and you, like, I'll be looking at you and be like, man, like, what are you talking about? Because when I put my GM hat on, it's not just about now. It's not just about the history. It's about what is your vision for the future? Right. And at the end of the day, when we look at Paul George, Paul George is a number two. And Paul George lost a little something with that injury. You know what I'm saying? He's not the same. He's great. He recovered. Yeah. He can still get you 30. He can win your playoff game.
Pre-injury Paul George?
Oh, yeah. That was a different guy. He was going toe-to-toe with LeBron in the playoffs. 40 points. Can't guard me. Dunking on everybody. He's not that guy. He's jelly. He's not jammed no more. You know what I'm saying? So when I look at a five-year window, there's no way I'm giving them my first round picks beyond 5 years.
But what are those picks going to really do for your team? Because, like, who have they drafted? The last superstar they had was what? James Harden? Was that the
latest? They drafted.
Was he the last one, or was Russ the last one?
No, James was the last one.
So since James, or maybe Ibaka was the last one too.
But they've had high picks, though.
Exactly. They drafted
Steven Adams, but
Roberson, which is a nice role player, you know, championship role player. Let's be honest.
I'm just saying, right? Those players are not moving the needle.
Of course, right? Yeah. But what I'm saying though is once Russell diminishes and you move on, and Paul George diminishes and you move on, we're talking about drafting in the top 10 again. So how am I going to be giving up those picks?
And that's 2 years after that. I'm just saying, if you were to give a four, because that's what the offer was.
No, of course.
If you were to give, just 2 years later,
No, but that is a small market. You cannot leverage. Why do you think that Indiana held on so long with Paul George? Because they know. Larry Bird said it. He says, in this market, there's no way that we could just let Paul George walk. We have to get something in return. This is Indiana. What guy that is 19 to 25 saying, yo, I want to go live in Indiana. I want to go live in OKC. Who? Millionaire? Multi-millionaire? We talking about 20 million, 12 lights. Million? Come on. No. And it's not just the big lights. You want lifestyle.
Not everybody's like that, because otherwise Russ wouldn't have stayed.
Here,
but Russ is treated like a king.
Think Paul George didn't have a bunch of chalices full of whatever?
Paul George wanted to win.
No. Ken, you're going against everything we were just saying. Paul George wanted the money, which is why he stayed in OKC.
No, he wanted the money now, but I'm talking about in Indiana.
If he wanted the money, he would have stayed in Indiana. If he wants to win, that's why he left.
No.
That's why we had that whole conversation.
No. Wait. Hold on.
He wanted to go to LA.
However, he stayed at OKC because the same money that Indiana could have signed him for is the same money OKC signed him for. Whenever a player gets traded, the bird rights goes with that player.
With the team. So what the fuck happened in Indiana? I'm trying to remember.
He just said he said he was going to resign. Yeah, he said
he was going to leave as a free agent. Yeah.
So that's why they had to move him.
So that's the reason why they traded him. They got Victor Oladipo and some other stuff in return.
But that goes against.
So you saying
Nick. How does that go against the money part, Ken?
Because if he was going to leave as a free agent, how was he going to be able to get as much money as a free agent?
He wasn't. He was going to leave more money on the table. However, he still had the opportunity to leave. And what did he do?
So then he didn't want to go to L.A. in the first place then, if that's the case.
No, what I'm saying is...
It sounded like he was... But there's a reason...
That's what I'm saying. What is the reason why he didn't go to L.A.?
Indiana.
Yeah.
First of all, okay, let's go step by step. He was in Indiana, contract year. He goes to Larry Bird in the organization, says, I am not re-signing. You right. better trade me to get something in return because I will not be coming back here.
So was he trying to strong arm his way to L.A. at that point?
Yes, because the player has leverage, right? I want to go to L.A. and get my money, so trade me there. That's my preferred destination.
And then you'll get something in return. You already know I'm not signing.
So well, they didn't trade nobody for him.
Exactly.
They one-upped him, yeah.
So, because the Lakers wanted to sign him in free agency. They didn't want to give up any young talent. They didn't want to give up. Exactly. They didn't want to give up the Ingrams and all of that, right?
They had a feeling we were going to get him anyway.
Anyway, so the Indiana Pacers, in turn, said, you know what? We'll trade you to OKC. They got Victor Oladipo in return. Now, as a free agent, Paul George had all the opportunity to sign with any team he wanted to.
So then it came back to L.A. versus the money.
And what did he pick?
He picked the money.
And how many players pick the money over the situation? They all do.
Damn, he went full mellow.
But if you saying that Paul George was gonna go, like y'all were saying that he was saying he wanted to go to L.A. even while he was in OKC.
No.
Saying that. The media kept asking him about that.
No, I'm saying you guys were thinking like he was still going to L.A. while he was still in OKC, right?
No.
Soon as he went to OKC, you knew he was staying?
I thought he was staying for two reasons. Number one, the money. Number two, they actually have a star there, a legitimate star. They had an MVP. What did the Lakers have before LeBron? A whole bunch of young guys that you don't know what they're going to pan out to be. There's no guarantee there.
And everything was saying that he was liking. So I'll just go by the report. So they were saying that he was liking Russ.
Yeah, and then let's be honest, right? Like, if you look at OKC versus the Lakers, where was he going to win more?
OKC.
And where was he going to get more money?
OKC.
So then why the hell am I going to go to the Lakers?
And went to the playoffs first year there.
Right.
So why go to
a situation that is there's more questions than answers? In OKC, I know first and foremost we're gonna play defense. I know I got a big traditional big man down there that's leading the league in offensive rebounds. So that means we get even more possessions. I know I'm playing with an MVP that averages a triple double.
And Melo's gone.
Melo wasn't the reason. They would if Melo was still on that team, they'll be
get out of here.
They'll be 6-0.
Get out of here. But at the end of the day, we broke all of that down to say that 9 times out of 10, NBA players are going to choose the money over almost anything else. Almost over anything else. Let's be honest. Let's look at the history. People are taking the hometown contract.
And you can look at Melo. I mean, it's documented now. Like, we know the stories. You know, after all these years, Melo had a shot. Like, it was supposed to be Melo and not Bosh. And Melo took the money. You know, and he decided to stay. They had this whole thing orchestrated and planned out, and Melo went against it. So they went and got Bosh, and Melo's still without a ring.
We don't know that the season's still young.
As of right now. Let's jump to Tampa, man.
Another guy I was right about.
I mean, what are you, 1 for 20?
I might be 4 for 4.
Man, get out of here, boy.
The Skins was going to be the top of the East. Jameis is washed, and he's been washed.
The Saints.
And then Fitzmagic, hey, he almost
– All right, so let me preface this by saying when we were sitting here shooting and recording, we sat down on that table. We had just finished recording the podcast. We sat down on that couch. I looked up 2 for 4, 27 yards or whatever he had, interception. I told FIFO, I said, they're going to bench Winston. They're going to go back to Fitzpatrick. And I'll be damned if that shit didn't happen. I said that shit while Winston was still playing.
He did. And then what did I say? I took it a step further. I said if Fitzpatrick won the game, this is the last time we saw Jameis in a Tampa Bay uniform. Now, here's the thing.
He jumped out the window.
No, I'm not jumping
That's
out
That's not
the
really
window.
Jumping out the window.
I disagree with that.
Even though Fitzpatrick didn't win the game.
The fact that he got him.
I think that, he got him in position to win the game. I think that it's about to be a wrap for Jameis in Tampa Bay. I really do. Because here's the thing, right? And early in the season, what did I say? If Fitzmagic is playing, you play him. If Fitzpatrick is playing.
Fitztragic.
Okay, well, we got Fitzmagic and Fitztragic.
And Fitztragic.
if we have Fitzmagic, right? Jameis is the starter. You bring him back. You see what he does. If he struggles like he has, you bring back Fitzmagic. But if Fitzmagic looks like Fitz tragic, then Jameis is the guy. He finishes the season. Then you decide
you
on
that. You can't go back and forth. Yeah, you can't go back and forth.
No, I feel you. No. I feel you. Fitzpatrick, this is his job for the rest of the season. It is what it is, right? I think that Jameis is done in Tampa Bay.
I've been telling y'all that since the beginning of the season when he was suspended.
Look, I told the story to show that I'm not hard-headed. I can look at
it. Oh, it takes him to get benched.
Yeah, I mean, I can look at him and be like, yeah, I don't think this is going to play out well. And part of the reason why I was saying that is, let's be clear, I still believe in Jameis Winston. This has nothing to do with me not believing in him or his talent or his ability to be, you know, at least an above-average quarterback. I'm going to go back, all the way back to when they fired Lovie Smith. And, you know, Jameis hasn't done his part to uphold his end of the bargain to show people he can play. Let me roll a little bit of that back. This season, he hasn't. He has improved every year in the league up until now. I didn't like the way he looked in the post game. He looked like his confidence was shot.
No, I can't really. I just know I got to take care of the football. I got to fix it. That's really all. I just can't turn the ball over. I got to fix it. I think I just got to, like I said, I just got to fix it, man. I just can't play like that. What has to change is I just had to get back in the drawing boards and start executing. I'm executing. I just can't turn the ball over. It's my fault that we were in that position. I'm definitely the reason why we came up short with this game. I can't turn the ball over. Not four, not one, not two. I need to give myself a chance to win. I just know that I have to fix this problem, and I will. But again, there's no excuses. I just got to eliminate them. My turnovers have been a big factor in our play this season. So I got to eliminate that.
He looked like there was interception. Everything was bothering him. So I don't know what's going on with him this season, but he doesn't look like the same guy. But Dirk Cutter is the reason why Jameis and that organization is struggling. And Dirk Cutter is trying to save his job. And that was part of why I said they're going to go back to Fitzpatrick.
Well, I think Dirk Cutter is fired at the end of the season.
Oh, he's gone. He's gone. He got to go. They never should have got rid of Lovie Smith. I mean,
that's just more apparent now than ever.
It was apparent when it happened, and I said it shouldn't happen.
My thing is with Jameis because his faults is way more catastrophic than the coach because he was supposed to be the future. He's the franchise quarterback. He's number one overall. You expected him to be with this franchise for at least, 10, 12 years, 15 years, and now how quarterbacks are playing. The fact that he came into the game with seven interceptions, right?
Not good, man.
And this is, his fourth year? Fourth year going to it. Next year will be his fifth. And then this year was his contract year, basically. Didn't two of them go for pick sixes?
Or no, one of them did.
One of them did. You throw four interceptions? Like, and granted, I'm from Cincinnati, so the Bengals, their defense is good, but it's not, they're not getting takeaways like that. They're not ball hawks like that unless you throw it in their lap like how he was doing. It's just, to me, you guys say he improved every year. To me, it was improvement is wins and losses when you're talking about a quarterback. That's my improvement that I judge.
I thought you like facts, man. You're supposed to be the guy to like facts. I'm giving you statistical data.
You giving me stats, but do they equal a dub? Like I like the numbers look good after up until a certain point.
What's Fever's favorite word so far? Context. That stuff matters. It matters. So
you throw a big numbers and you get a hot L. That matters too.
Tampa Bay, they are a dysfunctional organization. True or false?
That's definitely true.
So when I evaluate Jameis and that organization,
we can't always just blame everybody just because we don't like the quarterback, though. Or like just because the quarterback isn't playing well up to our standards.
Jared Goff.
But so would you say the Rams were a bad organization when Jeff Fisher was the head coach, or would you just Jeff Fisher was the head was just a bad coach?
We have evidence to support it.
Because to me, the Rams, all the Rams did was just take out Jeff Fisher, insert Sean McVay, and everything was
great. Take out Dirk Cutter, give Jameis a better coach, and what would happen?
So then I have to walk that back. So the organization isn't bad; it's just the coach.
But it starts at the organization though.
For firing him in the first place?
To make that decision to get rid of Lovey.
Exactly.
As they were improving, because they felt, this is what they said, that Cutter, they didn't want to lose Cutter, and that Cutter had a relationship with Jameis Winston. That relationship was better as an OC than a head coach because he has
what did Jameis say during that whole transition?
Because that's key. Say? He was like a rookie.
He still can say, like, I don't want Lovey to leave.
Yeah, but what's that going to do? That's not going to do anything but create animosity with the new regime coming in terms of the coaching
staff.
Yeah,
Baker's not saying anything about Hugh Jackson.
Well, because Hugh Jackson sucks. Like, there's no defending you. But at least with Lovey, you say, hey, look, we 8-8. I still give, like, at least give us all together 1 year and to make that decision.
But here's the thing.
He's coming with a lot of draft capital. Number one can talk shit.
I understand that. And we've had some draft busts before, right? So. You know, and he may turn out to not be that guy. But I think, you know, we know that Jameis has talent. We know that he has upside. So what's holding him back? We know he has bad decision making on the field. But,
and off, so it doesn't help. He's just a bust.
I know you like to
put the cape on for the brothers, but
this isn't
you need to retire. You need to retire as a superhero.
I didn't cape for Geno Smith. I didn't cape for Jamarcus Russell.
He's a
Keely Smith.
He's a bust because as much as you say that he's improved throughout his 4 years, right now he should not be coming in. He only started three games and he has 11 picks. And he didn't even start the beginning of the season. Like
bad stretch.
That not a bad stretch. He's a bad quarterback. Like but you don't after 4 years you said 3 years is who you are who you are as a quarterback. We're in year 4 and he's still making these decisions.
Yeah, but he's also had a lot of turmoil in terms of the organization. So look, I'm not saying that Jameis is the greatest all time or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? I'm over here. The way I believe that sports is ran is that. We knew that Jameis was going to be a high turnover type of quarterback, right? Like we never anticipated him, you know, 40 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. We never thought he was going to be that. Mm-hmm. If he got 40 touchdowns, he's going to throw about 15 to 18 interceptions in a year, right? We know that, right? We know that about the type of quarterback he is. And you can win with those type of quarterbacks. However, you need to have the vision of how they are going to be ran, the type of offense, right, and the continuity. He hasn't had any of that. And to Ken's point, when you took away Jeff Fisher, right, and that rookie year, Ken himself was like, I don't know about Jared Goff. A whole bunch of people. I know I was one of the very few that said Jared Goff is the guy. I don't know what's happening, but whenever I see him throw the rock, I see why he was drafted where he was drafted. And everybody thought I was crazy as hell. They got the guy, right? And now he looks like a damn top 3 quarterback in the league, right? So at the end of the day, it's really about that relationship with that quarterback and that head coach. And how many times do we talk about it on this podcast? I say it all the time. You could tell the majority of the playoff teams in this league, not just by the quarterback, but that head coach-quarterback combination. Mm-hmm. If you have a head coach-quarterback combination – you are going to be a top 5 team in the NFL. It just it works that way. And I can't say that Jameis has had that guy. And to Jameis's to the other side of that, not every quarterback gets that head coach in their career.
Right. Yeah.
And then sometimes you get them later in your career. You know, and I don't know if Jameis is going to be able to survive everything, because if we look at the landscape of the NFL, who's going to take a flyer on Jameis? You know what I'm saying? I think maybe I think
nobody.
I still think there's teams out there.
I want to see him in Pittsburgh.
Ah, hell no.
Yes.
They got too much going on already to throw Jameis in there.
No, they don't.
Are you serious?
Ben ain't got more than 1 more or 2 more years if that.
No, I understand.
Jameis got 1 more year in Tampa.
Y'all acting like we can't draft somebody. That's my thing is like, what quarterback is out there right now that I would put off drafting my own guy because he's still that good?
Look,
Jameis ain't that.
I put it to you like this. Jameis is still better than, I would say, about a third of the league. And to me, better than Eli. They wouldn't be 1-7 right now.
Andrew Luck was trashed in what year? Now I know he was a little bit hurt, but he wasn't looking good for a while.
But Andrew Luck has shown that he, even with a bad organization around him,
Bruce Arians.
He's had 11-5 teams. He's won playoff games. He went to an AFC championship game.
Bruce, the coach, Bruce Arians.
Okay, but nonetheless, he's shown me that.
But what happened when Bruce Arians left?
When he left, he left. Hey.
I'm just saying.
But
coaching matters in the NFL.
I hear what you're saying, but for me, it's more about how much time are we going to waste? How much time are we going to waste, basically?
I think it's a wash in Tampa.
You got to wash your hands. It's over. Can he be successful somewhere else? Maybe. I doubt it. But for right now, he doesn't show that he's a leader on or off the field. And two, the system that you guys are complaining about, I've seen Fitzpatrick flourishing damn near three times now. Like, he's thrown up good numbers. And in the Jeff Fisher era, when he was a head coach, we've never seen a quarterback flourish in his system to compare him.
Steve McNair.
Yeah, exactly. I'm about to say.
I'm talking about when he was with St. Louis, like with the Rams.
But like he was with the Rams for 2 years.
Nah, he was with them for a while.
I forgot how long, but
I'm just saying, like, the Jared Goff era was from – when Jared Goff got there, they were bad, and when they let him go and brought somebody else, they were good. So that tells me it was Jeff Fisher. With Cutter, I'm not saying he's a great coach at all, but I've seen a quarterback flourish, someone who beat the Eagles.
You've seen a veteran quarterback, bro.
Okay, but he still – is Jameis not a veteran right now?
He's been playing in the league 4 years.
That's a vet. That's a vet. When do you become
league, what, 13, 14 years? He's played in
but
multiple.
He's played in multiple systems, so he's seen it all. But it barely matters because Jameis's potential was way more higher than Fitzpatrick. I expect a lot more from Jameis than I do from Fitzpatrick. I think we all do.
And here's the thing, right? Like to Fitzpatrick's point, he's been a journeyman quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Why can't Jameis be a journeyman quarterback? Maybe he doesn't realize
because black
his
people
potential.
don't travel well when it comes to true. We just know in the NFL they don't.
But that's
you
why
only
I
get
say
one
he
chance.
He may not be the franchise quarterback that they drafted him to be, but he can at least be an above average quarterback.
And he could be a backup. He could be a career backup like that. Like there's a whole bunch of guys like that, right? And let's be honest, it's not like Jameis can't play this game. I just think that it's a lot him. I'm not absolving him of some of the
not these turnovers or the way
exactly.
He's playing this year. No, absolutely
I'm
not
absolving him of that.
He's played
however
terrible.
You know what I'm saying? Like he can be a serviceable backup a lot of places, and like I said, I still think he's better than a third of the quarterbacks in the league. Like I put it to you like this. I'll take him over Case Keenum.
I'll take him over
Case Keenum. You know what I'm saying? There's still about a third of the league. There's about 8 to 12 teams that I think that he could still quarterback for.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's like
I take him over Eli right now.
Okay, but that's like saying, okay, I'd rather take a shit sandwich with cheese sandwich. Like, it's still a shit sandwich. Like, it don't matter. You could put cheese on it.
No, wait.
All the fixings.
Don't you talk about wins? Right? Yeah. Like, with quarterback?
Yeah.
So you mean to tell me that if Jameis was in with the Giants, they wouldn't have more than one win?
I don't know. I can't tell you that offensive. Woo! Have you looked at that offensive line? Woo! You had somebody come at you about that on social media.
I'll deal with all them. we'll deal with them tomorrow.
I'm just saying, like,
come on.
I don't know.
On,
I Nick. Don't know with that Nick, offensive line.
Nick, I'm giving you this. He may not be the franchise quarterback, but the only thing Raph is saying, the only thing I'm saying is that he can't be a quarterback.
I'm just saying. So would you say Tampa Bay is a better team than the Giants? Right now.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
So you're saying you want Jameis, who already has 11 picks. He came into to yesterday's game with 7, and he came out with 11, so he threw 4 picks. You telling me you put him in New York, and you think he'll be better?
Yes.
That's what you're – I can't believe that.
Because here's the thing.
He doesn't have Saquon Barkley.
Exactly. He don't have a guy he could just turn around and hand that thing off to about 15 to 25 times and then throw it to him about another 5 to 10 times. And then he don't have a weapon. Look, I like Mike Evans. I like Deshaun Still.
Mike Evans is good. Deshaun.
But they ain't Odell.
No, Mike Evans ain't that far off from Odell. He's top five.
Nah.
He ain't top five?
Nah, he's out the top five.
Name me your five. Name me your five.
AB.
Okay.
Julio.
Okay.
Odell. Let me go.
Okay, through. Now you are here. We go.
No. I just what's in DeAndre Hopkins?
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you Mike is right there. Green. Mike is right there.
No.
No, he's top 10.
Yeah, he's definitely top 10, but I he's right out the top 5 though.
I think he's top 5. So I think your list ends with Mike Evans.
Nah. He can play. And now I'm not discrediting his talent. I just don't know if he's like right on the edge of top 5.
I'm just saying he has weapons. He has a top 5 wide receiver in my opinion. He has a top 5 tight end, I could say, in my opinion, with OJ Howard. And he has a solid number 2 wide receiver in Jackson. Like, without the running game, okay, there's a lot of teams without a running game. Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a running game. Andrew Luck doesn't have a running game.
Luck has one now.
Oh, with Mac?
Marlon Mack.
Return of the Mac? Cool.
Aaron Rodgers is special. Aaron Rodgers, yeah.
No, so but I'm just saying there's other teams who don't throw that many. And then you're talking about him over Eli. Eli hasn't thrown that many interceptions like Jameis.
But Eli has a history of leading.
I'm talking about what he's doing now.
I'm just saying what Eli has done is lead the league in interceptions.
He's done that, but I'm talking about right now.
And Eli's a turnover machine too, bro.
He is, that's why I'm comparing them because they're both turnover
you
machines.
You still love your Giants. You still love Eli.
I don't care for Eli. They should move on. I was texting y'all. I said that he's gonna get benched after this bye week. They're gonna put Kyle that rookie.
But they shouldn't draft the quarterback. Okay.
They're going to draft the quarterback this season.
They should have drafted one this season.
No, they didn't. They're fine. Yeah. They're fine.
I'm over here.
Look, you over
I would say right now where I'm at with Jameis is that I just want to see him with – right now just another organization.
What team? The Bills?
It's just not – I think Pittsburgh, man.
Pittsburgh ain't don't want to – they already got their quarterback. They drafted that one white dude.
I don't know. I don't know about him. I think
you Pittsburgh is the type of organization they don't need that from their quarterback.
Oh,
they already,
no. You put him with Tomlin, under Tomlin's rule, trust me, they won't.
Tomlin might not even be there after this
Tomlin's
season.
Tomlin's be there, man. They don't fire coaches in Pittsburgh. You know that.
Time for everything.
Nah, you know that. But I think, look, here's the thing. This is why I know I'm pro brother. Everybody knows this, listen to this. But some players need black leadership. Jameis is from Bessemer, Alabama. I know exactly where this at because I dated a girl there for 7 years. Her dad stays in Bessemer, Alabama. I know exactly where it's at. I've been there plenty of times. When you're a guy like Jameis Winston and you're in a country town like Bessemer, Alabama, you're black, everybody cowers to your feet. You get the world, right? You're not accountable for anything, and we see evidence of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes you need a strong another black man to say, "Hey, man, look, these are the things you can't do," you know, because he can talk to you in a way that a white coach can't. I think Lovie Smith was that for him. So taking that into consideration and moving him to somebody like Tomlin, I think he would flourish under that type of leadership and that type of mentorship because he would be able to tell him, look, man, it's much bigger than you. Like, we had a big argument on this show, me and Kyle, about Jameis Winston and, like, what he has to realize that whether he wants it or not, he is a role model, you know, for other black quarterbacks. And his actions on the field and off the field don't reflect well on us, right, or other black quarterbacks coming underneath him. So going to Pittsburgh with his talent, I could see Tomlin riding the ship.
I don't know. You putting a lot on Tomlin because he got it. He's still getting his own locker room together.
Hey man, what have we heard anything out of Pittsburgh over the last couple of weeks besides Le'Veon Bell?
I mean, finally. That's all I'm saying.
A lot of that stuff is media manufactured, man.
A lot of that stuff was coming from the players, flat out.
It's the media, man. The media, because they love – Pittsburgh is clicks, man, so they just find stuff.
So you guys think that Jameis goes into another situation and he just needs to change the scenery?
It depends on the situation. I think Jameis needs to
– I don't think no team really – I mean, backup. Yes, backup quarterback. I can see him being a backup.
More than a backup.
But as far as starting, I don't see any team that would start him.
I disagree.
Yeah, I
who that wouldn't just rather draft. The Giants are going to draft their own QB.
Not in this up and coming.
The Giants are done with science projects. They try to put together Eli and have some type of equation for him to be successful. It doesn't work. They just trying to get their own.
But Jameis is still a young enough quarterback that
he's
can 24, learn.
Man.
Exactly. He's still a young enough quarterback that can learn under the right leadership and guidance.
We're not saying franchise, Nick.
Yeah, we're not saying
then
that.
Then if you ain't saying franchise, then I don't want to deal with him.
But the thing is that
Case
he can
Keenum
win.
And Kirk Cousins?
Exactly. He
not,
can win.
Not the New York. New York wants a winner.
We're just saying he can go for another team.
He can win. Look, let's be honest, right? Like, I've broken down quarterbacks and the type of quarterbacks that there are in the league, right? Jameis is one of those guys that needs weapons. Giants got weapons.
Everything just has to go right for him. He hasn't found his Jimbo Fisher in the NFL.
Yep.
The Jimbo Fisher that will grab him by the helmet.
Yep.
And be like, yo, you need to get your shit together. That's what he needs.
Yep.
I got a lot of faith in Jameis, but
I do.
It's just,
but we all agree that he's over in Tampa.
Oh yeah, but the thing, it's not that I have a whole bunch of faith.
I don't think
it's over for him. I still think he has time to turn it around. So it's not like I'm like, oh yeah, he's just going to be great. Nah, he has to have the right situation.
He has the right coach,
and he's still young enough to turn his career around. It's just the right situation. We don't know what it is yet.
I don't think he's over in Tampa. I think. He has one more year.
You tripping.
He has one more year. I think he already.
He
I
is
think they've
the
already,
done. Don Cheadle done deal.
I think they've already extended him for that fifth year. I think they picked up the option.
I don't think so.
I thought I heard they picked up the option.
Why would they do that?
Why wouldn't they?
Because it's cheaper to pick up the option than to re-sign him.
Yeah, why would they?
I think they're going to let him go.
Nah, it's possible.
Or try to trade him.
You can't let go of talent like that, man. Not
at the quarterback position.
Not yet. He'll get one more year. Cutter's going to make a decision to save his job, but I think they're going to move on from Cutter first. And then, 14th.
Damn. He made 14
three-pointers. Them boys scored 92 in the first half, bro.
That don't make any sense. But I think they're going to get rid of Cutter first. Cutter hasn't worked. Jameis has not flourished under Dirk Cutter, and that's why they kept him around. That's why they fired Lovie Smith.
Yep.
So we can't always look at just Jameis, because that's why you were hired, and we chose you, bro, and you're not doing your job. You know? So let me see if they picked up their options. So that's what I'm thinking. Look, let me ask you guys this while I'm looking at that. Ty Montgomery apparently was having a fit on the sideline. They told him to take a knee. You're down by two. You got Aaron Rodgers, and this fool come out. And not only did he come out of the damn end zone, he fumbled the damn ball. Would you release him?
Would I release him? Yeah, just because he. I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
His ass go.
I would release him just for the fact that he has not given you any team like. Anything to go off of. Like he was right. He was like a third string receiver anyway. Then he became a third string running back. So it's not like he's helping your team. And then on top of that, he cost you a big game against the number one team in the league right now, which I possibly could have a field goal to Aaron Rodgers ain't nothing.
It's nothing.
So it was a 2-minute drill.
Exactly.
Like it was just
for Mr. Magic. Yeah, you know it was gonna go down.
Yeah, so
Aaron was gonna get them.
I can see them letting them go, but at the same time, it was also a great defensive play. Because if he doesn't fumble, we're not talking about a whole new game.
But it's about the decision.
Yeah,
it's not the fumble.
We don't
decision.
Care about that. It was a great play. We know that.
No, he had opportunity to save himself.
Just stay your ass in.
Yeah, just letting the ball go, touching it.
Because here's the thing, right? Like when you're playing on a team, regardless if it's football, basketball, if it's sports, and you know that you got the guy on your team, all you got to do is give him the opportunity. And what he did by making that decision is not giving your guy the opportunity to win the game because you was trying to do it yourself.
Yep, because you mad because they took you out for a series. You said it. You are a marginal player on this team. It's Devontae Adams.
And Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe and Jimmy. Jimmy Graham.
Maybe.
But they're not even using him right.
Yeah.
If you're Mike McCarthy, you're struggling. You're winning games. Aaron Rodgers is LeBron in the NFL. He's winning games for Mike McCarthy. Yeah.
Could Mike get fired after this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think they're about done with him.
Yeah, but I think that the organization has to take a hard look at themselves because
absolutely.
Look, I understand they haven't had very high draft picks because they're always in the playoffs, right? Like you got Aaron Rodgers, you're not going to finish with a top three draft pick. It is what it is. However, they have not been able to truly supply the type of talent offensively or defensively them to be better.
I can't even give you the excuse as far as like they pick low in the draft because we've been seeing a lot of players come out late. So it's still on them as far as scouting.
Yeah,
they haven't drafted well at all.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's another reason why fumbling was another reason why I said he should have left. He could be. That's the guy I want in New York. If anything, if he was
of
a free
agent, anybody wants Aaron Rodgers. If
he could have been a free agent.
That's why
you
keep saying that. Uh-huh. You got an agenda you pushing.
Hey,
Nick it's Bayless.
It's too late now. If I was Skip Bayless, I would be hating Aaron Rodgers right now. But no, it's
now
too late now.
Your own agenda.
I'm just saying he had a chance to leave that situation, and they keep proving him wrong every time for staying.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy, man. He's just the average coach.
McCarthy could actually go to Cleveland. I can see that happening.
Mm-mm. Baker needs somebody better than that.
I don't think McCarthy's a bad coach. I just think he's not a coach that can train young talent and have – he can't have it. He's not a have-it-all coach.
Is he an elite coach?
No.
Is he good?
He's top 10.
He's good to above average.
Yeah, I think he's
good. And it's mostly because of his quarter. Mostly because of his quarterback. He was under
quarterback.
He had Brett Favre too, didn't he?
Did he? Did he go that far back?
I don't remember.
I could have sworn he had Brett Favre too, or like the latter half of Brett Favre.
But yeah, I would definitely get rid of Ty Montgomery because Mike McCarthy he has to show that that you just can't be disobeying my orders, bro. And you know it's just funny, like I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't help it, but just imagine if that was Tomlin. But all people are saying is, oh, you just took the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hand. You didn't give him a chance to win. If that was Tomlin, oh, you have no control over your players.
No, some
and your
some people are saying that. Some people are saying that McCarthy has no control over his players. Mm-hmm. That's why they're saying they calling for his job already.
Yeah. I think it's because he's underperformed.
I think it's about time.
Yeah,
what does it say about the Packers? Like, their schedule doesn't get any easier, I don't think.
No, it doesn't, but they'll be fine.
Well, they're lucky because the Vikings.
Kirk Cousins is who he is, man. He's a 500 quarterback.
Tony Romo,
yeah,
part two.
He really
that
is.
Was worse than Romo. Well, actually, nah,
he's Romo. They should have kept Case Keenum at this point.
Nah, they should have. They should have.
No, come on.
They should have. That's what I'm saying. Make an argument why.
What's Case doing in Denver?
Nothing.
All right. He was better in Minnesota.
But here's the thing though, right? Like, Kirk still gets numbers.
Oh, okay.
What are you talking about? Okay.
So because you brought up the whole argument with why Jameis because mm-hmm. numbers with Kirk don't mean nothing. They have Super Bowl expectations.
But all I'm saying is that Kirk is still better than Case Keenum, though. He's still an
not
upgrade.
That much better,
but he's still an upgrade. Yes,
I do.
So you're agreeing with me?
But you're paying a lot for a barely upgrade.
No,
it's
FIFO's
a quarterback.
Right. FIFO's right.
It's a quarterback. You pay that much because it's the position.
The upside with Kirk is higher than it is with Case.
You can go further with Kirk. I'm not saying that he's the end all be all. I'm not saying that. But all I'm saying is he's an upgrade to Case Keenum.
They should have got the side chick of the NFL. Alex Smith.
And honestly, the defense have regressed in
they
Minnesota,
have.
So.
Alex Smith will
that
be
man just know how to win, bro.
He would take he would take that Vikings team to a definitely deep in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He just know how to win. I don't know what it is about.
What he don't turn the ball over.
That's the main and what is Kirk? That's the whole reason why you say he has that Romo syndrome.
Exactly. It's not if, it's when.
Alex Smith, if you see him turn the ball over, it's usually off of a deflection or something.
It's rarely his fault. Is rarely his
now
fault.
Now he's not going
any sneaky athletic. So even what he doesn't have in terms of arm talent, he makes up with his feet. So that's the thing, man. Look, there's a whole bunch of different ways to win in the NFL, and I feel that you could win with Kirk. You could win with Alex Smith. There's a whole bunch of. I think you could win with Jameis. There's a whole bunch of quarterbacks you could win with. It's just what's the situation
Can
around
you win
them.
With Blake Bortles.
No,
you never could have won with.
Well, but
I think you could have early.
But you know what though? Like this last game, because we saw a lot of this last game.
They should have drafted Lamar.
No, that's too much of a project. Lamar's like 3 years away from actually seeing
it. So you're telling me, I don't think Lamar is as big of a project as people think he is.
I agree with you there, but they've won with Blake. I can see why they're
still didn't win when they need, like Lamar, makes up a lot for what Blake is doing.
But here's the thing though. Lamar Jackson can, I don't think he can consistently throw for 250 plus passing yards every game.
Right now.
He doesn't need to. He can be like a poor man's Cam where you could throw for what, a buck 80 and then run for 50 or 60.
But he don't have Cam's arm talent.
Nor his size.
Like to me, the reason why I say that Lamar Jackson.
He can physically throw.
And if you're talking about, and to me, it's only about accuracy. And then we say,
No. It's way beyond accuracy.
I'm saying he can throw, but as long as, if he's not accurate, it doesn't matter. But if he's on point with his targets, he can do a lot of stuff that Cam can do.
Here's the thing.
He can't take the hits, but he can run.
The reason why I say that Lamar is a big time project right now is because of progression. Reading the field and how quick all of those decisions have to happen. He's not ready for that.
And I'd rather see Lamar take 2 or 3 years to develop than go out there right now and fail.
Exactly. Because Lamar, and I'm not saying that he is at this talent level, but he's Tebow-esque, where you have to strip down the offense to its bare bones and be like, it's this or that. And that's it. And what happens to defenses? They know if it ain't this one, it's gonna be that one. Yeah. And they can jump on that. And then he's gonna have to rely too much on his athletic ability. Mm-hmm. And he was great in college with that. He can't outrun these guys like that. Mm-mm. He can't turn the corner. We saw it in preseason, right? Where he went to take off a run and linebackers and linemen are chasing him down. Mm-hmm. He ain't my Vic. So because of that, that's the reason why I don't want to see him play right now, because I think it's going to harm him more. I think it's better to save him and let him develop before you put him out there and then people start picking him apart.
Yep.
And then he can't get back into the NFL. Because I think he could be this era's Vince Young.
But at the same time, with that defense.
And Jeff Fisher failed Vince Young too.
He did, big time.
With that defense, and if they would have, well, I can't say if, but with that defense, Lamar would be in a lot better, like he would put that team in a lot more better positions than Bortles has.
Just off his athleticism.
And then once Fournette gets back, he would, like, you don't have to rely upon him to throw it down the field that much too, because then you're getting at least 100 yards from him. Like you're not asking that much. That's why I said they should have drafted Lamar, because he could have fit in perfectly, because you're not going to ask him to do too much.
But the stuff he does
will help you extend plays.
Regardless of whoever drafted Lamar, he wasn't going to play year one.
Right.
Regardless.
Yeah.
So
would you rather have Lamar or Bortles right now?
Today? I'd take Bortles.
I would too.
Look, Bortles has had a couple he's had a couple 400-yard passing games. Lamar Jackson would not sniff 400 yards. That's number one. That's number one. Number two, I was watching this last game. And the reason why I was watching the last game, when I came in to do Dead End Hip Hop, they was actually doing the podcast for The Walking Dead. So I actually got to watch a little bit of the game. I don't watch that show. And Blake Bortles, it wasn't his fault. A lot of wide receivers were dropping passes. They were fumbling. He was getting the ball on time and on target. But there was a very interesting stat that I pointed out to Ken that they put out there. 2.5 seconds or under, Blake Bortles was extremely accurate. And his passer rating was 108. Any play that was extended beyond 2.5 seconds, his passer rating plummeted to 65, and his completion percentage was like in the 40s. So what does that say, right? That's very interesting, right? When you look at the best quarterbacks in the league, when you're looking at Aaron Rodgers, when you're looking at Mahomes, when you're looking at Tom Brady, when you're looking at all Matt Ryan, all of them, the more time they get, the easier it is to pick you off, right? But with Blake Bortles, it's the complete opposite. And to me, that's in that game. I can't say every game, and I'm not saying Blake Bortles is Jesus. He's not a savior at all. But in that game, his wide receivers let him down. And let's be honest. You have to have talent, because Blake Bortles is one of those quarterbacks. You got to put weapons around him. They got to help him out. You can't leave him out there to dry. And I feel this last game and a lot of games, his offensive weapons have let him down.
And when he had Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, I mean, he was putting up numbers. He still was turning the ball over, but he was still able to produce on the field. They just didn't have the other pieces. And no Fournette. So, but
and that stuff, that's a lot of pressure on, on Bortles right now.
Now, Lamar Jackson in year two or three?
Yes.
Over Blake Bortles?
1,000%. 1,000%. I give you that.
Gotcha.
But today?
But is, nah. Well, I'm just saying, if not now, then when? Because this season is going to be a wash. They're not going to do anything this season.
It is what it is.
Yeah, they committed to him.
We already know it's between the Pats and the Chiefs.
But they thought they were going to.
And the Steelers.
Right, but they thought they were going to do something this season.
Because of what? The QB. And to me, it's like, I'd rather.
Well, no. What was the identity of that team?
Running the ball and defense.
Exactly.
No, I'm saying they thought they were going to win because they thought we can.
They had the guy.
They thought we can elite. He's not going to mess it up that bad for us to win.
But here's the thing. Blake Bortles is good enough to win with Blake Bortles.
They did it last year.
I'm not saying he's the franchise. Oh, you know, he's going to be here 10, 20 years. No. But he's good enough to win with Blake Bortles.
Fournette. No Fournette, man.
That's big.
Yeah. I want to see the record with and without him. Because I think
at last year. He was a rookie last year.
That was his rookie season?
I thought
that was his second year.
That was his second year. This is his third year.
Yeah.
Damn, is it?
Yeah, because they extended him.
Man, these years are running together. Yeah. Look, real quick. Yes, they did pick up Jameis's fifth-year option. This was actually back in April. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, no, he's good. He's good, man. Yeah, I mean, you got to.
Yep.
And that was
cheap talent.
Yeah.
That was talent. I think it's more to do with the number one overall pick.
Nah.
So much draft capital.
Nick.
When you have draft – that's what I'm saying, like – You talking about GM? Put the GM hat back
not
on. When you put that much draft capital on another, especially a QB.
Not if he sucked. Not if he sucked.
Well, he been sucking.
Nah. Nick, this was in April 2017. So remember what I told you?
Yeah,
he improved every year.
Yeah, and this was
up until this year.
And this was the year for him to prove
right.
Like,
but
that
what I'm saying
extension.
At the time they picked up his option, the data showed that he improved. This year he's taking a back seat. You know, he's going in the other direction.
Now I can understand why they did that, because if he balled out this season, they was going to have to pay him a lot more.
Oh, they might be getting over.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They
might get lucky.
They was like, if he balled out this season, they was going to have to pay a lot more instead of just that fifth-year option,
because
which they can negotiate still.
Because you didn't have 2018. I mean, yeah, you didn't have 2018 to look at to say, should we not pick up his option? You had, you know, his previous 3 years, so – it makes sense. So now they just got to figure this thing out. He got one more year.
Cheap talent, which is why professional sports has to have a draft. Because Jameis, again, like I said, I think he's better than a third of the quarterbacks in the league. And you're paying him a rookie wage. That's value. There's value in that. To have an extremely talented guy. Like look at Russell Wilson. What was it, about 4 or 5 years ago when he was a rookie? Mm-hmm. Third, fourth round pick. They was paying this man like less than $1 million. And they paid him that for almost three years. That's value
that's
in
Super
that.
Bowl years, yeah.
There's value in that. So even though you may not be the best, you still cheap and you're pretty dang good. They gonna pick up them options. They may not re-sign you now. That's a whole different type of conversation. But we're gonna pick up that option.
Yep. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm trying to see if it's.
And you know what, man?
What's up?
DeMar is doing the damn thing.
I was gonna say that too. Remember,
he's doing the damn.
That's
thing.
That's why I said I was 4 for 4. Remember, I said I came into the season. I was like, hey, look at what DeMar does in San Antonio, and he is doing. He might be MVP conversation if he keep playing the way he is.
Damn, my Lakers though struggling.
Who they lose to this time?
Minnesota.
Timberwolves 11 total blocks tonight. And oh my goodness, Jimmy Butler, are you kidding me?
Minnesota.
Did you see that? Did you see the starting lineup?
Minnesota ain't right. No,
they,
I didn't see the
they went big. They
for the
went,
Lakers?
Yeah,
or Minnesota?
They, no, for the Lakers. They started their lineup with Lonzo, LeBron, Kuzma, Ingram, McGee.
Luke is done.
Why?
Luke is done, bro.
Lonzo had 4 points, one rebound, one assist. Rondo coming off the bench at 13, 6, and 8.
Luke is done,
I'm just
man.
Saying.
Luke is done.
I'm just saying.
That's one game because Lonzo.
That's two has, games. There's two games Rondo has outplayed him coming off the bench.
All I know is, and that's the reason why I said Rondo needs to play off the bench.
He's bodying his stats, though.
Well,
but what about the games that Lonzo bodied his stats?
What game was that? The one game that it was in Phoenix.
Look, we
against
we
the worst team
that.
In the NBA.
We'll debate that.
Worst team? They are definitely not tomorrow. The worst team.
They were the number one pick. That means they were the worst team in the NBA.
But they're not the worst team this year.
This year ain't over yet.
But they're not the worst team.
I'm saying they were playing against last year's worst team in the NBA.
But that's last year. This year, Phoenix.
Phoenix.
And they weren't the worst team because they didn't have the worst record.
If you're number one pick, you're a horrible team. That's all right.
But you know that's why there's a lottery.
No, I'm saying there's a lottery, but you got to be bad to get more balls to get up there, right?
I understand that. However, this year, let's be honest, DeAndre Ayton's the real deal. Devin Booker's the real deal.
I'm not disagreeing.
They are not the worst team in the NBA.
I'm not disagreeing.
I can name about three other teams worse than them.
The Hawks.
Yep. The Hawks are the worst team.
Shout out to Trae Young beating Doncic.
And I still love the Hawks. They're still a watch, even though they're bad.
Well, we know DeSean Jackson will not be traded, since he has to be traded. You know,
hell
selfishly,
nah,
he got his quarterback back.
Selfishly,
he
yep. Because Fitzpatrick.
Well, he got his numbers yesterday too, but yeah, he just won his own.
Well, he got his numbers yesterday. Jameis caught him
on that deep. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You cry, and all of a sudden you get the ball thrown your way, but. But Fitzpatrick is the starter now. He was named the starter, so
we'll see. He's playing a hot Carolina team. We'll see what he do.
So now, for sure, DeSean Jackson is happy because whenever Fitzpatrick was the quarterback, he got the ball thrown his way. I don't know what was going on. Maybe I don't know, man. We can debate that forever. But
I got one more thing. FIFO, tell me if I'm wrong in this or not. Is DeMar DeRozan the best mid-range shooter in the NBA right now?
Oh yeah, he's been that for a minute. That ain't nothing new.
Okay, I was just making sure I wasn't bugging because I'm like, and he's the only.
Yeah,
yeah, he's the only he's the only one who still cares about mid-range. Him and Melo, the only ones that still care about mid-range. Everybody else shooting threes.
Damn, yeah, peoples. Look, I think if we look at almost all of the trades in like the last at least 10 years,
that's the most even.
Yes. It is because it's kind of like you almost traded a version of the same player, right? Because Kawhi, I think Kawhi's overall better than DeMar.
Like his little brother. You just got his little brother.
Yeah. You know, but it's kind of like their games are so similar that they were just interchangeable. And I think that it actually benefited both teams because the Spurs have not had, outside of David Robinson, have not had a more athletic person than DeMar DeRozan. He's been their second or arguably their most athletic
player.
What
about Kawhi? You want to consider Kawhi athletic?
I think DeMar is more athletic than Kawhi.
Really?
I think he's more explosive. Hmm. Better jumper, better leaper, more stop and go, more what kind of moves do I want to say? What kind of adjective do I want to use to describe it? He has more flair to his game than Kawhi does. Kawhi is more methodical. Not saying that Kawhi ain't got no bounce. Kawhi is strong. He's like country strong, but he don't have explosion. When you watch Kawhi, do you just see him go? Whoa. Nah, he dunk on you, but he's dunking on you with power. DeMar go over you.
Yeah, he's that finesse strength type of player. Yeah, Nah, I like him.
Nah, I like the fit him for both players.
Malcolm Butler has sucked this year, by the way. For everybody,
knew that he's a system.
Yeah, but remember everything about, oh, you bench Malcolm Butler. Yeah, well, maybe that was a reason. We can close this out. I'm just kind of going through Bleacher Report, looking at the Tennessee Titans feed, searching for Marcus Mariota a bust. Marcus Mariota a major bust. Don't see it yet.
Not
damn,
yet.
Not
it's
major.
They call Winston a major bust.
You know what's funny? Me and my brother,
he's number one.
Here, we were talking.
Mariota was number two, bro.
Nobody talks about number two just as much as they do number ones. Come on.
But when you have a quarterback that's drafted one and two, then yes, because they're tied together.
And they were debating.
I know, exactly. Just like we don't talk about RG3 as much as we talk about Andrew Luck.
Because RG3 flamed out. And yes,
exactly.
We did
for the first 3 years. We did. Everybody did.
You're the second quarterback. Come on.
But here's the
people
thing that
thought he should have been first.
Do you think that if you swap those quarterbacks, right? You put Jameis in Tennessee, you put Mariota in Tampa Bay. Are you still in the same situation in both organizations? My vote is yes.
That is an interesting question.
I say same situ. I don't know. Actually, I think I might have preferred Winston in Tennessee than in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, but Tennessee hasn't been all that better. Look at the talent they have. They don't even have. Mm-hmm. They have no talent. Well, they have talent. They don't have no coaching. Like, they're bad, man. But we don't ever talk about Mariota, number two.
Well, nobody talks about the Titans anyway like that anyway.
But he's the second pick of the draft.
But he's in Tennessee.
You know what? And it started out.
That's like that's probably the worst market in
the
NFL.
But you know what it was? When they wanted to put Winston down, they talked about Mariota. Oh, look at Mariota balling. That's all you saw was Mariota should have been the number one pick. You remember, that's all they were saying.
No, I always said Jameis should have been number one because he won. I mean, whenever you're coming off of a national championship, you as a quarterback, and he led that game winning drive.
I fell in love with him his freshman year.
That game winning drive in the championship, like you obviously man. Number one.
Ice water.
I fell in love with him. And maybe I'm still holding on to that, but I fell in love with Jameis his freshman year. Same thing with Deshaun Watson. I was like, oh yeah. So
well, when you beat Alabama, woo, yeah,
I was like, that's the
same thing with Cam when he was
Cam.
In Auburn.
I fell in love. We with saw Cam. It.
I love Cam because he self-made, built his way up from what is it, JUCO, all the way up to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Auburn.
Most of the black quarterbacks I like pan out, man. They do. But all I'm saying is I like to point out these things on this show because we're a black show, and I think the way the media covers black athletes matter. And when they wanted to put Jameis Winston down, they always used Mariota, and they were always linked because there was the debate who's first or who's second. Mm-hmm. And when Mariota was performing well, it was like, see, he should have been the number one pick. Mariota's better, this, that, and other. Now that Mariota's failing, you know, and can't stay on the field, nobody's calling him a bust yet. I think I may have seen one story, but Mariota doesn't generate clicks. So, anyway, But yeah, Fitzpatrick's back, so we're about to see now. Everybody coming at me on Twitter. Oh, they lit me up. Talking about, see, thank you, Nick, for telling the truth about Jameis Winston. Man, y'all shut the fuck up.
Hey, I'll be preaching. You get this service every Thursday.
Yo, you see Luka's numbers?
Finally. He's been
31, but look at the efficiency. 11 out of 18, nah, 8 rebounds, 4 assists.
Hey, those are them white boys. They know how to shoot.
All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll catch you guys next time. We out. Peace.